everyone, and welcome to another episode of Upzoned, where every week we take just one story from the news that touches the Strong Towns conversation, and we upzone it. We talk about it in depth. I'm Kia, and I am back this week with Chuck. How are you doing today, Chuck? How are things in Brainerd?
They're fantastic. I'm actually sitting on the back porch in shorts and no socks and no shoes because it's that nice out today. So yeah, perfect.
It's sweaty here in St. Louis, but one downside of the car light lifestyle that I leave, my partner takes the car out to work most days, and today I had to carry my cat in his carrier to the vet down the street, so in like 75 degree weather, but you know, he'll be okay. Yeah,
I bet it was more uncomfortable for the cat though, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Well, my vet is only like a block and a half away, so I'm lucky in that regard. He's right there. But in any case, I am excited that you actually picked the article that we're going to talk about this week, Chuck. So I can give sort of the general lead in, but you can tell us much more. It's from Minneapolis Star Tribune. It's called In St. Paul, Massive Street Repair Bills Rile Homeowners. And it is about something called assessments, which I had never heard of them in this context. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what it is and why it's got people so mad?
Yeah. Well, assessments, I used to do these when I worked as an engineer, and there's an art to them that we should talk about. But basically, like, an assessment is if the government goes in and does an improvement or makes some, you know, investment, and that investment increases the value of your property, the government can do what's called a direct assessment. They can actually charge you for that improvement. They're not allowed to charge you if they don't improve the value of your property, and they're not allowed to charge you more than the value of your property. This goes back to the Fifth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. And, you know, basically we can't take your property, i.e. your money, without like a due process. And the due process in this case is we go through an assessment hearing, an assessment process. We notify you we're making this change. We're going to pave the street, or we're going to put in sewer and water where it wasn't before, or we're going to do something that would make your property more valuable. You would then have a chance to comment on that, object to it, what have you. And then when the project is done, that amount gets assessed to you. Oftentimes, cities will finance that. They'll say, well, we'll finance for you over 5 years or 10 years or 20 years or whatever. And you make those payments with your property taxes, or you just write a check to the city for your share. That's called an assessment. And cities use those all the time when they're building and putting in new infrastructure. Although we could talk about it a little bit, they don't use them where they should. You know, and the federal and state government, like, hardly ever. I don't know of a single case where they've used them, and they really should too.
That's interesting. So I guess maybe the reason I've never heard of direct assessments is my city doesn't do a lot of improvements to infrastructure. We are very out of money for that. But just to be clear, you don't get a say as a homeowner on whether or not this improvement is made. Like, you can't say like, no, don't repair my street. I don't want to have to pay for that.
You're required to go through a public process here in Minnesota, and every other state that I know has the same kind of public process. But let's say that everybody who was part of this didn't want it. The city could technically still do it. The only protection you have as a homeowner is they can't charge you more than what they improve your property value. So if they do something and it costs $10,000 a property to do, and your property value only goes up by $5,000, they can only direct assess you $5,000. The other $5,000 has got to be some public benefit that would be paid through general taxpayer money.
Okay. So, and how is like the increased value to your home assessed, you know? Because you don't really know how much your home is worth until it sells on the open market, right? I mean, like, is it similar to the way that they assess for property taxes and things like that?
That's always the trick, right? Because if you go out and you build something new, how much does that make the property go up? And there's always a question mark around that. And so generally what you see is that cities don't do improvements like that unless the property owners want them. So if the property owners come in and say, we would like to, and the ones that I worked on a lot that were like this is, we have a gravel road and we would like our road paved. And the city would come in and say, okay, we'll do a study. And we'll figure out, like, here's what our estimate is of what it's going to cost everybody to do. Are you all willing to pay that? And if the answer is yes, and they all sign a petition and they all like, yeah, we're in, then the city will go ahead and do it. And if the property owners are like, yeah, we're not sure, or we don't know if it's worth that much, they won't do it. That's like very, very common. And so essentially what you're doing is you're using the city's ability to basically finance something and work collectively to make an improvement to an area that property owners, if they had to, you know, sit down in a homeowners association and work out, would not be able to do as easily. Generally, cities will only go forward with projects when people are in agreement. So there isn't, yeah, there isn't a dispute over the assessment in a sense.
Let's talk about this mess in St. Paul. We've got like the kind of 101 stuff down. St. Paul, it seems like from the tone of this article, and we can talk about whether we agree with this reporting or not, basically makes it sound like a bunch of homeowners opened the mail one day and they had bills for thousands of dollars. It starts with an anecdote about a couple that had a $5,000 bill in their mailbox for a street that they didn't ask for. And it seems like they don't understand why that cost wasn't spread. There are lots of fairness questions about if I live on, say, a major arterial road that I don't use nearly as exclusively, rather, as someone who like lives on a cul-de-sac at the end of like a long suburban road. Why should I have to pay for the full cost of that road? It's a public good. It's a public thoroughfare. So the whole article ends with this question about injustice, which is what we talked about last week, right? Like, is it fair to charge all of these homeowners this amount? Should it be charged differently? I have a feeling I know how you're going to react to that, but why don't we just take things a little bit slow? How did this take all these homeowners in St. Paul by surprise?
I don't know if you know how I'll react to this. I'll answer the question, why did it take them by surprise? Because they're taxpayers and they expect the city to maintain their street. This cuts right to the heart of the whole Ponzi scheme problem that we've been talking about for a decade now. When we go out and we build something new, we have all these easy mechanisms to build it. Direct assessment is one of them. If we go out and we're going to put in a new subdivision, a new development, a new strip mall or what have you, and we have to run new sewer pipe and new water pipe and roads and curbs and sidewalks and all this stuff, we can do a direct assessment project. The city can essentially do that project, borrow the money to make the costs, and then charge through the direct assessment process these new properties for that. And they will pay it. They will pay it because it improves their property value and they can roll that into your mortgage and everything else. It's all great. What happens then when the city has to go out and fix it? And as a taxpayer, what most taxpayers assume, I think this is a reasonable assumption, is that now I have this improved property value. Now I've built a house or I've built a commercial building or whatever, and I'm paying way more taxes than I was before this was developed. And those taxes go to pay for you to fix the street. And what actually happens is that, no, the city doesn't have enough money to fix the street. The amount of money you're paying is going for other things, not fixing your street. And when we get to the end and we got to fix your street, we don't have any money to do it. And so what cities do is they take this direct assessment process and instead of using it for new improvements, they use it for maintenance. They go out and they say, okay, in this case of St. Paul, here's a $5,000 bill for us to go out and mill and overlay your street, which basically means take the top 2 inches of pavement, grind that off, and then go back and put 2 inches of smooth pavement down, a basic maintenance project. We're going to give you a direct assessment for that. And property owners flip out because they're like, what do you mean? Like, I'm paying taxes. Shouldn't my taxes cover this? And that's the rub. They don't. And that's never like communicated anywhere.
The way that I thought you would react to this, and I don't think you've disproved me, was of course it's unfair that any given homeowner, you know, is paying taxes into a system and it's not covering their costs. Like when you get that $5,000 bill in the mail, that feels really unfair. You might be interested in saying like, why can't that rich person on the other side of town do it? Why can't we get this money somewhere else? But when you look at the fundamental wealth that's generated by our street pattern, there's kind of no way to do it with our current development pattern, right? Like it's, you can talk about justice all you want, but if you're like you know, stuck in a cave in the apocalypse and there's one can of beans and 100 people there, doling out the beans is still not going in like a completely proportionate or a completely equitable way, is not going to keep anyone from starving at the end of the day. So we need to sort of re-pause, rethink the sort of fundamental mechanisms by which we're getting our money and stop squabbling over what's fair to who, which is, of course, not to discount the very real problems of people in St. Paul today. That isn't done overnight, and that's a pretty painful process. Did I peg your reaction wrong?
Yeah, I think so. I'm a little bit obsessive about this, and I am because I feel like the lack of discipline on this issue has created a daisy chain of problems that keep rearing its ugly head. So if you have a paved street today, the top of that pavement is a little bit gnarly. You know, it's got some cracks and some potholes and stuff. And we go out as a city and we mill off the top 2 inches and we put 2 inches of nice smooth pavement on. How much more is your house worth? Well, the reality is it's not worth anything more. You know, especially today, the way we securitize things and the way we value properties is really kind of like algorithmic almost. You might be able to argue, and I've heard realtors argue this, and I feel like it's a huge stretch. You might be able to argue that it's like a tiny bit more valuable because you're on a nice street as opposed to like a 5-year-old street or a 10-year-old street. I find that really dubious. The reality is like the check boxes that go with your securitized mortgage is just says, is it an improved street or not? You know, is it got a finished pavement surface or a dirt surface? And that is like a box. And once you have, I think it's more clear with like a water pipe, right? Once you have a water pipe and you're getting water, if you go on vacation for 6 months, like you go on a 6-month sabbatical and then you come back, and in that 6 months, the city dug up the pipe in front of your house and replaced it with a new pipe, but didn't tell you. And everything was like restored back, and say it's winter, so it's all covered with snow. You can't see anything dug up. You would not have any clue that this happened. It would not be perceptive to you in any way. And so the idea that maintenance, like routine maintenance, provides an increase in property value is just not right. It's not correct. It's not right. And so you get into this problem where cities can't legally assess for maintenance. They come up with all kinds of reasons why they think they can and why they think they should. The reality is that cities have made a fundamental mistake when they accept property in that doesn't create enough wealth to actually take care of itself. When you have this pattern of development where you build all at once to a finished state, you don't allow it to evolve, adapt, change, and you lock it into a state where it's financially very low returning, that is a bad public investment. You don't make up for that by going out and basically stealing money or using your kind of coercive power to force, you know, unsuspecting property owners to deal with these random large bills for basically bad public administration. And I think that's what bothers me the most about it. When I was an engineer, I was kind of schooled in the fine art of assessment, because every city has an assessment policy, and the assessment policy goes through and like, it will say, here's how much you charge of a project's cost per front foot, and here's how much you charge per side foot, and here's the way sidewalks are assessed. It'll go through and detail all these things. And if you follow the policy strictly, what winds up happening is that every single property has like a different amount, because every single property is like slightly different. People flip out with that. They're like, it's a fairness thing. And so the art of assessing is to come up with a number that feels right to people, is high enough where you collect enough money to actually help the city close the financial gap they have, but low enough to where, in order for people to challenge it, which by the way, they have to go to district court to challenge it, the cost you're assessing is lower than the cost to challenge it, or at least comparable, so that there's no incentive to challenge it. If it's going to cost you $6,000 to go to district court and actually have like a protest to your assessment, but your assessment is only $7,000 or $8,000, are you going to go through the district court process to fight that? Or are you just going to pay, you know, the $8,000, which, oh, by the way, the city's kind enough to finance for you over 20 years. You're not going to fight it. And so what happens is that cities have these sloppy practices that take in just horrible developments that make no cash flow sense. And they do it with the confidence that they're going to be able to go back after the fact and kind of sock property owners with these random bills. I find it immoral. I mean, I find it to be just like the wrong, I find it to be immoral on like so many different levels.
I mean, I hear that. And we're dealing with sort of a miniaturized version of a similar thing in St. Louis right now, because we are seeing property taxes go up without improvements because our neighborhood is gentrifying rapidly. And, you know, I'm still trying to wrap my head around all the mechanisms of it. But the long and short of it is that we have long-term low-income homeowners who are seeing their property taxes go up by $700, $800, as much as $2,000 in a single year, like talking about like 200% increases, which is completely legal in Missouri. So it's just really, I can imagine lots of people on the other end of this podcast, you know, getting stuck on this question of fairness, which I think is not an irrelevant question. Even if at the core of it, there's like a fundamental insolvency that we need to talk through, and we need to start rethinking this stuff. Like, what do we do in the short term? Are you going to be out in St. Paul? You don't live too far from there, like standing with the homeowners who are protesting this? Or what do you think the solution is?
I do think we have to break this assessment process. I think we have to do it in two ways. First, I think that it's ridiculous for the state and local governments to come in and make instant millionaires out of property owners without assessing them. You know, you go and you build an interchange in a cornfield and you make the people who own all those acres around it, you know, multimillionaires overnight. And the state does nothing to recoup that, like nothing. To me, that is immoral as well. Like, what are we doing? Why are we transferring public dollars to private individuals in that way? But on the reciprocal side, this idea that we can be very lazy and very blasé and very like obsessed on the first life cycle of growth without the second life cycle impacts, because we can assess our way out of it and basically coerce money from people, I think that's got to end. And I would love to see, and I have seen some class action lawsuits brought, basically homeowners getting together saying, yes, for one of us, it makes no financial sense to challenge it. But if we all go together, then it makes a lot of financial sense for us to challenge it. I would like to see more of those go forward. I think from the city standpoint, cities need to, first of all, stop adding developments that are negative returning. There needs to be a consequence for that, and there needs to be some pain. We've got to actually deal with that now. I think the lack of any feedback mechanism is a huge problem. The second thing, though, is I think we're going to have to have a deeper conversation about who's responsible for these costs. In Minnesota, we have the ability to create street improvement districts. And I think street improvement districts in Minnesota is the way to go. Other states might not have this mechanism, but you can actually go to an area and say, okay, this area here has streets. They're going to cost X amount of dollars to fix. We are going to create a utility district and we're going to charge you a fee. And that fee is going to go into this fund and that fund's going to be used to fix your street. And I think if you live 3 miles out of town, you should have a fee that is correlated to your street costs. And if you live in where, like in my neighborhood, in the core heart of the city, where we have, you know, a 25-foot lot and a bunch of property owners sharing the same street, your street improvement cost is going to be a lot less. I think if cities did that, now all of a sudden you're starting to have some real decision-making taking place in terms of where we're going to move, what properties are going to be valued, how that's going to be reflected in the marketplace. And you start to get some real feedback. And that's what our current approach just lacks is feedback.
So how does that work in the context of arterials? This question that was raised in the Tribune article, because I keep thinking about my own neighborhood. I live in a street a lot like yours, Chuck, which is populous, fine-grained, the whole mix of uses, houses on smaller lots. And I feel like I would do pretty well under your system. You walk 3 blocks to the east and you have a Strode with high vacancy rates and not a whole lot of people there to share the burden of maintaining that Strode. How would those sort of property owners fare under what you're proposing?
Well, the reality is that Strodes, when you build them, actually diminish property values. The scenario you're talking about actually would not work with an assessment process, regardless of how you did it, because you're actually not improving anyone's property value. Let's get beyond that. a strode or an arterial, you know, when you're building an arterial, the concept behind it is that this is a community, it's a neighborhood wide or a community wide or a regional wide amenity. It's something that you're building because it's going to create this regional mobility value and benefit. And that value and benefit is going to show up in the overall wealth and prosperity of the community. So the way you pay for that is you raise taxes and you use your tax dollars to pay for it. The reality is we should have fewer of those than we do today, because the ones we built are not, you know, not only negative returning, they don't pay for themselves, but they actually like erode our tax base and decline values. So instead of getting more money from the state or the federal government to build more of those, which, you know, here in Minnesota, we have the state aid system where the city can tap into state money and federal money to improve arterials as part of a overall transportation management plan. And what that means is running strodes through the middle of the neighborhoods. Instead of having that as our policy, we actually need to build fewer of those and focus more on, you know, how does our transportation system connect us to places? And then how does it provide mobility and build wealth within our places? The way we go about funding these things today is at complete odds with that.
I feel like I've learned a lot today, Chuck. Thank you for letting me kind of sit back and listen a little bit. No, I mean, I've been thinking as we've been talking about one of the first articles I ever read at Strong Towns, which was the real reason your city has no money, or maybe it was poor neighborhoods make the best investment. One of those classic Strong Towns articles that basically says, like, we've got a concentration of prosperous, wealth-generating neighborhoods, but they happen to be in places where the residents are not prosperous, and it's subsidizing places out on the edge of town. In my early Strong Towns days, I did not have a very sophisticated response to that article. I said, cool, so how about we just lower taxes, property taxes in poor neighborhoods and raise them in rich neighborhoods? Bada bing, bada boom, we're done. And getting a little bit more into the weeds of how to build a resilient system and like what the mechanisms of that system might be has really opened my eyes to just how complicated the problems of governance are, but also how important they are. Because like, if your chief concern is justice, which I think it is my chief concern, and in the way that I look at the world, it's how I'm wired to think about problems like these, you got to get a little bit further into the weeds and think through many scenarios. And you've helped me do that today. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I do think, like, if we're going to talk just justice, the idea that a couple in St. Paul would get a $5,000 bill for resurfacing an arterial that diminishes the value of their property while providing this regional, you know, access for people to speed by their home.
Right.
That just sits wrong in so many ways, right?
Yeah. And which, by the way, is going to make it so their kids can never play in the street. You know, I mean, it's a safety issue too.
No, totally. So these policies are deeply embedded, and they're driven by this financial desperation. And if we don't recognize that and start to deal with it, we do a lot of cruel things to people in service of this bad development model. And yeah, I'm with you on the justice part in that. Like I said, this is immoral. And when I say immoral, I think you would say unjust.
Unfair.
And I think we're meaning kind of the same thing. Yeah.
Totally. Well, let's set aside this heavy talk of justice and fairness and talk about some movies that we've been watching and some books we've been reading. It's time for The Down Zone. Chuck, what have you been enjoying lately in the media realm? It doesn't have to touch the Strong Towns conversation at all. This is just for fun.
It's been hard not to watch or listen to every single Minnesota Twins game because all of a sudden my baseball team is like the best team in the league, just miraculously. But I started a book called Midnight in Chernobyl, the untold story of the world's greatest nuclear disaster. And rip roaring read. So pretty cool.
Very cool. I am still in a little bit of a reading drought because I'm slogging through 300-400 page books, but I took some time away from that this weekend to see a double feature. I saw Avengers Endgame, followed immediately by Pokemon Detective Pikachu. So
you're joking.
I went inside. Yeah. It's been a running joke in my household. I had a great time. It was like the modern day Who Framed Roger Rabbit. It was really cute.
Yeah. That's like 5 hours straight of movie.
Oh yeah. With transport and 15 minutes to grab snacks in between, it was like 6 hours. So that was my Sunday pretty much.
So I don't think I said this last week. Maybe I did. When I was in Peoria last week, I went to their like IMAX surround sound, big screen 3D theater in the downtown. And I was the only person there for the 10 o'clock showing of Endgame. That was my second time seeing it. And it, in that format, it was so awesome.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I saw it in one of those like recliner seat theaters, and I sat in like the very front row, and it felt IMAX-y to me. It was great. I thought it was a really good movie. I loved how funny it was. I was shocked by like the amount of humor in that movie and how they made the time pass, because it's a long movie, but it doesn't feel long because of they interwove all of those stories and tied up so many things. Like I just like from a pure craft standpoint was like, good job, Avengers. Good job. So no spoilers.
So next week, I will be reading Strong Towns, A Bottom-Up Revolution to Rebuild American Prosperity, because next week I get the copy edits.
That's so exciting.
Which I think this is the part I've been dreading more than any other. So we'll see. I may hate my own book a week from today, but we'll see.
Just like punch a pillow
Hopefully
when you
not.
Get mad at the copy editor. That's my only advice. So, well, I can't wait for everyone else to read that book. If you are interested in pre-ordering your copy and getting some behind the scenes sneak peeks exclusive content, you can go to strongtowns.org/strongamerica. And there's also a way to throw your town's hat in the ring to be in the tour as well. I think that probably ends us for the day. Thank you so much, Chuck. And thank you everyone for supporting Upzoned. Keep doing what you can to build a strong town. And we will see you next week for our spring member drive. So I will just leave it at that today. Have a good one.